they have the same ethical prescriptions, norms, and the image of a poet as a people mediator. Nevertheless, poetry of Stus, because Shevchenko was poet of Romanticism era, and he has this pathos and idea and like everything that you know about him. And Stus was, if not postmodern, then postmodern, postmodern but not postmodern era, postmodern in Soviet Union era. His poetry does not consist agitation or something, anti-Soviet, anti-regime statements, or even he has no certain political agenda. It's a poetry of a European tradition based on human values and like this great, great narrative, let's say this word, of being human, how to be human in different conditions, how to feel, how to live, etc. And of course he was a poet of Ukrainian, of European tradition, because he was well educated and formed by Western literature. He translated Goethe, Rilke, Paul Celan, Kipling, Giuseppe Ungaretti, Federico Garcia Lorca, Guy de Maupassant, Arthur Rimbaud, René Char, and many others. So he knew all this poetry, he felt it. Of course, he loved Beethoven a lot, and he listened to him while he was not repressed. I didn't get to the prison. One of his cellmates revises that I see an intelligent person of European culture with a Rilke's book in his arms. That is why his poetry, in the contrary to Shevchenko, is very complicated. It's not mass poetry, and he even did it in purpose, avoiding being like this mass poetry that was on the time in Ukrainian popular poets, with enormous attention to words, their sounds, and meanings. Recently, there was a concert in Art Museum based on Svetoslav Lunyov music, which he wrote on verses of Ukrainian poets, and one of them were Stus poems. And this composer, Svetoslav Lunyov, I'm a friend of a pianist who performed it, and I heard their talk, and Lunyov explained that you need to pay attention to words themselves, not seeing them, not like try to make sound which does not consist in the words. So you need just everything in poetry that need to be there is actually in how words sound. So you shouldn't put much effort to read poetry, and this concerns especially Stus, because his words, they have, you see the energy that palindrome feels, and we will see other ways to read his poetry, and it like it bumps you, I don't know, it pushes you the way it's written. Quoting Slavistan literary critic George Yuri Shevelyov, he was born in Kharkiv, and after Second World War he worked in Harvard University and Columbia University. I will quote it. Political programs is not something that was in the poetry of Vasil Stus. The point is to find yourself in a world of spies, secret agents, snitches. Finding yourself is finding a Ukrainian person. Personally, I am happy to see a commonality with Rilke only in the fact that both poets seek an image of human feelings and state it in their becoming and not in their completion. I will draw a parallel from fine art. Delacroix, followed by the epigons of Romanticism, roamed the world looking for unusual and often exotic themes. In contrast to them, for example, Claude Monet, we can find dozens of paintings that reproduce the same portal of the Rouen Cathedral, or going even further, to intensive painting the same haystack. Someone said about Brahms that he wrote one symphony all his life, formerly four of them. In a certain sense, Stus writes his own symphony in most of his poems. But Brahms, of course, was lucky not to live in USSR without being repressed, without his works being destroyed. So he got this this chance to do his work. And overall, poets are those that change the world view of people. They reflect time and become a conscious and a symbol. And a true poet, he expresses what others feel. Like a great poet, Stus had a low instinct for self-preservation. That's an important thing, and I think what defines a poet, because poet cannot build a good career, or then he's not a poet, because he always should be against everything. It's a dramatic role. It's a role of like drama. It's a role of actually becoming an icon. You can revise Rimbaud and Baudelaire and every great poet. So now I will talk a bit about biography to illustrate this low level of self-preservation instinct. He was born on January 6, 1938, in a peasant family in Vinnytsia region. But 1 year after, his parents moved to Donetsk because to avoid collectivization, because at the time it was very, very harsh. Ukrainian historian Yaroslav Gritsak wrote that in Ukraine, traditional culture, which preserved in villages, saved this traditional Western Christianity, like Vertep. It's kind of a peasant theater based on biblical story. And these practices, they emerged from all the people that came from villages to cities during the Soviet period urbanization. And since most educated people were killed in the 30s, who lived in the city, these people from villages, new generation with something like core in it, they came and they very fast like gained the level of education, the level of knowledge, and continued somehow this their predecessors. He worked as teacher in Korlivka school, and he felt the catastrophe of Russification at the time because Donbas region was highly Russificated, and he wrote even a letter to a poet who was popular at the time, Malyshko, about the dramatic situation that Ukrainian language is disappearing. Then he had military service, and what's important, most people start writing verses, poems in teenagership, and it's okay, it's normal, but it passes then, or not passes, sometimes it's even
almost
a problem.
Valentine. Huh? It's almost Valentine.
Yeah. But he starts to write poems during military service. Then he gets back and he works as a journalist. He entered a doctoral program at the Shevchenko Institute of Literature. At the same time, he published some of his selected verses in some magazines. It was the first and last publication of his works ever in Ukraine, in Ukrainian language. He married Valentina Popeliuk, sometimes you may see her here, and his son Dmytro was born in 1966. On September 4th, 1965, during the premiere of Sergei Parajanov, and Sergei Parajanov is Russified name, the real name of Sergei Parajanov is Sarkis Parajanian, because he was Armenian, raised in Georgia, so he was not Sergei at all. on the premiere of his film Shadows of Forgotten Ancestors, probably not all Ukrainians know this movie, but probably not only Ukrainians know about this movie. It was premiered in Ukraine, but a year before it was premiered in the West, and it gained success. And after 1 year, it got premiered in the country it was shooted. It like Soviet reality. A few people, Ivan Dzhuba and Vyacheslav Chernobyl, future dissidents, they wanted to use this opportunity of presentation of this film to tell about repressions about Ukrainian intelligentsia that started like 1 year, just recently started. So they had a conspiracy, let's say. They agreed that they will go on the stage and tell like, repression started, let's protest, let's do something. They did it. Stus wasn't aware of this episode. He didn't know that it was planned, and they told about this. Of course, KGB agents that were in each second chair, they reacted, tried to make a sound. Some organizers of the event switch on the air ray, I don't know, siren, to shut it down. But Vasilis Tus was one of them who raised as a protest against the repression. Of course, there was another like KGB agent who like wrote down everyone who stand up, and it was the beginning of his dramatic way, because before it was everything okay. He was very well educated, he was on his doctorate program, huge career and good life was ahead, but he wasn't able to bear this kind of injustice. He was the person who was who couldn't stand injustice overall, and he was 27, the age when like all this club 27 people, all these musicians, you know, they died this age, and it was the level when you are boiled, when you want to like influence, when you are on the peak. And of course he did it, and actually he chose the road to actually where he finished. As a result, this very at the end of September, he lost his job. He was fired. He was fired from institute. He was fired from his doctorate. He wasn't able to finish his work, and he got to work on a building site, fireman, engineer, continuing his intensive work on poetry. He submitted a couple of books for publishing, but they got rejected because it was not like pro USSR, etc. And the main point that he was in the list of the people that couldn't publish books in Soviet Union. In 1970, his book, one of his book, was published in London, and that caused, of course, problems for Stus, because it was like a crime to have your book published abroad. So a few years later, in 1972, he was arrested for anti-Soviet agitation and propaganda. He was sentenced to 5 years in concentration camp and 3 years of exile in Magadan Oblast. What's interesting that first term he get as a poet, because this book wrote 2019, I think, by Kipiani, a researcher of Ukrainian Samizdat and a journalist. And here you can see the all the protocols of KGB documents considering Stus' case, because in Ukraine archives are opened, in Russian Federation they are not. That's why a lot of documents, they are still not available to understand what happened, and most important, how he died. And is this documents I wrote the I've read analysis, like literary critics analyze it for KGB, his verses, and they will state like, these are harmful, these are decadent, they're not optimistic enough, and this is like okay, it's like it's okay. Most of them, it's ridiculous, but anyway, they kind of was from the low side, but overall it was very very ridiculous. So now a bit about generation of 60s. There is a term 60 years, or шестидесятники in Ukrainian. It's a generation, term itself is very complicated, because you cannot define and you cannot properly tell what is the what does it mean and who you can include. But what's important in their worldview was that it was a time of Khrushchev Tsao, or Vidliga, when Stalin died and his personality cult was denounced, and people start believe that now like it can be normal, it can be promised future maybe come. And sure, most of them wanted what that can be called like socialism with a human face. They were not anti-Soviet, they just want to make it like a better place to live, because of course they were like Soviet people with a certain level of views. Of course, they frustrated very soon, and despite writers of 60s having thin connections with the generation of executed and killed, repressed writers from 20s, 30s, they were their successors by spirit, and they read their books. As an example, you may use Nikola Zerov, who was very well educated, so-called neoclassicism neoclassicism author of 1920s, 1930s, and his verses, his poems were transferred by the Samizdat infrastructure. Overall, in 2014, there is a very interesting and very fruitful discussion about how to commemorate and how to treat Ukrainian culture heritage from Soviet Union period, because it's what's hard to separate ideology from real art, from architecture, from literature as well. But I think this discussion led to a pretty clear positions, and that's why we have a very good movement on preserving heritage that really that is really meaningful. So getting back to these 60s and to a group which Stus was part of, actually what happened were small groups of close friends who spent time together, who understood each other, they share their inspiration of the literature, they share their thoughts, they read poems to each other, as Stus in one verse named there, "My late Aets." It's from Homer. I cannot explain what Aets, but sounds Greek enough. They were trying to prevent repressions from 1930s, because of course they were aware, and if you probably know, after Stalin's death, there was a process of rehabilitation. Not all of them were rehabilitated, because like Mykola Khvilevy, one of the greatest poets, was rehabilitated only in the late 80s, but overall they knew about it, and they were they believed that they can avoid the new level of the repressions, that repressions are in the past. But now they choose a way to oppose it legally, and as a human rights movement. And that's how they became dissidents. The circle was not anti-Soviet, as I told you, and not nationalist at all. It was even technically impossible. Most of them were from eastern part of Ukraine, and connections with people who were nationalist was very, very thin, because most of them were in Soviet concentration camps. By the way, almost ruined them because of their rioting, and helped the new generations of political prisoners, because before they frightened these criminal prisoners, because criminal prisoners were used as a tool for frightening these political prisoners, and they did riots, and so new generations of political prisoners were pretty safe because criminals afraid of them. Even about nationalism, I can remind you, if you don't know, like Russian, they misuse every word. So if they put like nationalist, actually it's or fascist or Nazi or whatever, it just literally means enemy. And because even Sergei Parajanov was sentenced for Ukrainian nationalism. So Georgian Armenian guy was a nationalist, and also he had two reasons to get to prison. First is homosexuality, second is nationalism. The way it was. After first imprisonments, all of them, all these dissidents, they became anti-Soviet, because they understood everything, and they wanted to, of course, fight till the end, because they had nothing to lose. And human rights, of course, it was a crime for the Soviet Union. That's why from 60s to... these circles, they not only opposed, and they didn't just perform this human rights movement, trying to save people, try to fight for these rights. They also created what is called, may be called, high culture. Literature, sometimes movies, literature critics, etc. And because in USSR only folk based on social realism standards was allowed in occupied republics. It was not real folk music, which is now getting back, and you can hear a lot of interesting projects. Of course, they couldn't bear it, and they wanted to create something like really cultural and really like high. That's why from 1960s Stus told that we should consider ourselves aristocrats, not just folk, people, but aristocrats. And he wrote a verse called Evolution of a Poet. I translated it via Google translation, but overall I think the meaning is still the same. A genius poet bifurcated on himself and fear. The semi-poet split into two, for a quarter poet and fear. The quarter poet split into two, in 1/8 and a fear. A poet's 1/8 split into two, on smell and fear. Now, as he passed down the street, above his head, white smoke hung, and the opposite ones are frightened, respectfully stepped on his way. Yeah, that's... So actually he wrote like he described perfectly how it happened, how it looked like to be a poet in a totalitarian regime. After first sentence he got back to Kiev. He had only 9 months before the second imprisonment. When he got to concentration camp for the first time, his son Dmitro was only 2, and when he got back he was almost 13. He was a teenager, and of course for him it was hard to set relationship with a father who he didn't know, plus teenagership. He blamed father for drop them, and it was like harsh even from this point of view. In Kiev, Tus revises, I learned that people close to Helsinki group were being repressed in the most fragrant manner. This is the least had been the case on the trials of Ovsienko, Horbal, Litvin, and they were soon to deal similarly with Chernobyl and Rozumny. I didn't want to that kind of Kiev. So what was the Helsinki group? At that time, USSR signed the Helsinki Human Rights Agreement, and they became a part of this agreement, and they got to do something with human rights itself. But the problem was that this group that created this Ukrainian Helsinki group, they created to use this tool to save people within USSR. They were repressed. So first group that entered this Helsinki group was repressed. Second was repressed. And when Stus just wanted to enter it, he knew that he will be repressed. It was like obvious for all of them. And of course, he was not just a fighter. He was also pretty ironic. He had a sense of humor. And one of his friends asked, like, why did you do it? Don't you know you will be repressed? And he told, well, you know, an old lady asked me. I couldn't refuse. So, of course, as Oksana Zabushka wrote in her late book, My Last Journey. My Longest Journey, about her father, because her father was repressed, and she told that it was very scary for all repressed people to get the second term, because for most of them, second term was the last one. People got died or broke under pressure. And so that happened to Stus. So if first sentence he got as a poet, second he got as a dissident. In prior to Olympic Games in Moscow in 1980, there were a lot of activities from regime to clear up country from elements that can be not look like pretty good. In Moscow it was harsh, like people with disabilities, with not homeless but like alcoholic, they just like removed totally from the streets. He was arrested and received a 10-year sentence for anti-Soviet activity plus 5 years of exile. So if he would survive, he'd got to get out from this imprisonership in 1995. What's important and interesting in it that government put an advocate to protect him as Medvedchuk. Medvedchuk later became an pretty influential Ukrainian politic. But it was also obvious that he was a KGB agent from Soviet period, because it was super obvious, plus there are documents. And he was kind of a got to protect. Stus wanted to refuse to use this advocate, but he was allowed to refuse. And Medvedchuk did nothing actually to protect him, and actually his as the result, Stus get the maximum term possible in this case. In October 2020, when this book probably was published, it was published in 2019. In 2020, Medvedchuk put to this author of this book trial about something that he was not right in this book, and actually there was a thing that literally told like the servant of Soviet regime, Medvedchuk, and Shistka, who understands Ukrainian, it's more precise, I don't know prison words in English, unfortunately, or not unfortunately, and Medvedchuk, there was a trial, it was very, very, very loud, of course, and eventually Medvedchuk lost, he got to pay a fine. And also, he promoted this book very well, and they got to make another thousand of books, and it was so. Thank you, Medvedchuk, at least for something. Of course, Medvedchuk during the full-scale invasion, he tried to run away, but he got caught, and then he got exchanged to Ukrainian militaries, and now he is in Moscow because he is like a KGB agent, and plus he is close to Putin. There are a lot of people who visited the places of Vasil Stus' imprisonment, and one of them revises that afterwards he was in the camera when Vasil Stus died, and he told like I was close there just for experiment for 15 minutes, and he told like I couldn't like even I wanted to escape from them because it's super scary. As hell. So Stus, during the second imprisonment, he was no right to write his own poems. He wrote almost 400, or we don't know how many verses he wrote, and all of them were destroyed. Only six managed to get out from prisons, from some things people transferred, but mostly people remembered his verses. Sometimes Armenian, Lithuanian, Jewish people, they revised his verses, and then like published it. At the beginning of this movie, one of the prisoners who was in the same prison as Vasil Stus, he makes an excursion for the group and for the shooting group, and he finds here I hided the Kipling's translation by Vasil Stus, and he like puts them out. I don't know, maybe it was a fake, but it looks like the thing, and he got a lot of isolation. He got to isolation, it's kind of a carcer called, for attempt to transfer verses from camp, and even translations were destroyed. Last, another Rilke, a lot of Rilke in my talk, he translated Rilke for 1.5 years, and he told like, if you don't let me write my own verses, then maybe I can translate Rilke. He worked on these translations, and they took them and destroyed. And probably this was the thing that put him to mental breakdown. He totally he passed. He was very sick. He had only 1/3 of his stomach because of the operation, and he was very. He had a lot of troubles with heart. So he was very, very sick. And another few things that are important, that when his wife and the son managed to come to him, he screamed on his wife like, why did you let to humiliate you? Because there are a process of inspection which was very humiliating, especially for women. And he told like, why did you let them humiliate you? Because I'm here for avoid being humiliated at all. And that was the thing, that mission that he saw. And another thing that people that was with him in this concentration camp told, that at the late period, the only condition for him to get back to stop being prisoner is to write promise stop opposing to the regime. It was pretty simple, but he refused it because he understood that it would be he should went to the age, and he did it, of course. There is also a very interesting myth about Nobel Prize, which he was almost get. But the problem is that Nobel Prize do not openly communicate what candidates do they have, but there are some committees that promote people for getting Nobel Prize. There was in fact a committee that wanted to promote Stus to Nobel Prize, and to tell the truth, Stus was the author that deserves a Nobel Prize. And the case was not like even artistic thing, but they wanted to save him because there was a situation with Nazi regime with Hitler, when one of his opposers who was in jail, Karl von Ossietzky, was promoted to Nobel Prize, and they hoped that Hitler will set him free. Yeah, but Hitler was the guy that put him in the hospital, and he died in hospital. So anyway, he didn't save, but at least it was a chance. So to brotherhood, to Soviet regime, Nazi regime, they wanted, they thought that it will work the same, and they tried to save Stus. So probably it wouldn't have happened, but it could happen. And last thing is Rebury process, because by Soviet laws, prisoners that die in concentration camps, they get to bury at that very place when they died. But as Stus writing was one of his verses, and Palindrom did it, he wrote that we will die, but the movement will stay. And on November 19, 1989, the remains of Basil Stus, Alexa Tichy, and Yuri Litvin, who also died in this concentration camp, were brought back to Kyiv and reburied in Baikova Cemetery. The ceremony attended is more than 30,000 people. They brought Ukrainian flags, which was impossible for Soviet regime, and they passed through the KGB building, and KGB agents, like, they watched, and they understood that it's the end, they cannot manage it, they cannot repress so much people. And there were also one black and red flag from Ternopil. And what's the most impressive thing is that in 1990s, the Supreme Court of the Soviet Union canceled Stus' verdict, and the case was closed due to the lack of evidence. That's a perfect end of this thing. And another comparison with Shevchenko, process of burying of Shevchenko was people wrote that it was kind of a burying of a king, because Shevchenko, you know, the level which Shevchenko had, and it was something like which was similar to Vasil Stus as well, because it was something that he it was almost like biblical story when he as a Christian martyr, he put his cross, he put it to the edge, to put to the end, and then a lot of people he impressed, and it probably he was the one of the reasons why Soviet Union falls, because Ukraine was one of the first republic who escaped it. And also his last address was at Chernobyl Street, and that's another symbolic thing, because a lot of historians, Sergei Plakhy, Yaroslav Ritsak, they consider that Chernobyl was one of the important things that led to escape Ukraine from Soviet Union, because it was led by Soviets. That's all for biographical side. Thank you. Now we can have intermission. You can go to toilet, you can go to the bar. Cash is better for the bar, but if you have no cash, you may use a PIN. So, yeah, let's see in 10 minutes.
Sorry daarvoor, lieve luisteraar. We moesten even schakelen. Nou, dit was een heel verhaal over... was het niet? We moesten even pauze. Ja. Zo. Wat ga je allemaal doen? Oh ja, ja, die lichten die
zitten een beetje in de weg. Zit daar vast.
Ja, maar jij weet niet wat er
allemaal uitgaat. Lijkt maar zo.
Jij weet niet wat er allemaal uitgaat.
Heel kort op de stroom.
Gaat de beamer uit namelijk.
Ja, dat bedoel ik. Ja, dat zal niet de eerste keer zijn. Oh, wil jij een liedje zingen? Nee? Ah, jammer. Nou, dat was een leuk kindje, die was een liedje aan het zingen. Nou wil ik eigenlijk even... shit. Even roken. Sorry, lieve luisteraar, geen drugs op de radio. Perfect moment om even te praten natuurlijk. Misschien zijn er nog buitenrokers die wat te vertellen hebben. Hallo.
Hoi.
We zijn live op Radio Paterboel.
Oh, wat leuk.
Ja, toch?
Is het, je bent live?
Ja.
Oké. Okay. Te gek.
Ik ben een beetje nieuwsgierig, want ik zag jouw foto's maken de andere kant op, zullen we maar zeggen.
Ja, ja. Altijd tegen de stroom in, ja. Natuurlijk. Altijd de onderkant zoeken en de tegenkant. Maar... En het contrast. En de mensen.
Vergeef mij de associatie, maar het zag er echt uit alsof je alle gezichten wilde fotograferen of zo.
Nou, er zitten heel veel mensen in het publiek. Het lijkt me leuk voor de mensen die het georganiseerd hebben dat ik ze kan opsturen. Mm-hmm. Te kijken wie er waren, hoeveel mensen er waren.
Ja.
Of ze geïnteresseerde gezichten hadden. Dat zullen we later op de foto terugzien.
Ja.
Ik ben fotograaf, dus ja, ik doe dit. Ik vind het interessant. Ik vroeg net aan een van de Oekraïners of de dichter ook aanwezig was.
Ja,
en dan is het zo pijnlijk
dat hij. 85.
Ja, zij zeiden 58, maar het blijft dus 85. En ik dacht dat hij aanwezig zou zijn.
In gevangenschap, ja. In een concentratiekamp.
Ja, het is een soort Nazim Hikmet-achtig verhaal.
Wat voor verhaal?
Nazim Hikmet.
Tel me allemaal, geen idee, ik weet niks.
Een Turkse dichter.
Oh.
Die, daar, het, zijn lot lijkt daar een beetje op, vind ik. En ook zijn taal, maar daar kom ik niet... Ik moet nog eens achter boeken aan. Ik heb nog geen vertalingen gelezen.
Ja.
Maar ik ben hier ook om steun te brengen. Om er gewoon, door er gewoon te zijn.
Nou, hartstikke goed. Ja.
Dat is het eigenlijk.
Ja. Maar doe je dat vaker dan? Gewoon eerst naar binnen lopen of zo? Of tussen...
Qua fotograferen.
Ik heb het gevoel dat jij gewoon naar binnen loopt en gewoon een beetje foto's.
Nou, ik kom hier wel vaker in het Vrije Paleis, maar meestal om kunst te kijken. En ik ken Stefan, de boekieman.
Ja,
die woont op de Herengracht achter mij.
Ja.
En ik zei, dan gaan we...
67, toch?
Oh, ja, maar zijn nummer weet ik niet uit mijn hoofd.
Oh.
Maar mijn eigen nummer wel.
Dat is wel belangrijk voor de
luisteraar. Ik moet zo nog naar huis. Dus
Nou ja, ja, nee, maar onze lieve luisteraar die wil weten waar dan iedere dinsdag dat zich afspeelt natuurlijk.
Ja, nou,
want
ja.
Hij doet elke dinsdag, toch?
Ja, maar hij heeft ook bij op de Herengracht sessies met gedichten voorlezen, ja, schilderen. Ja. Hij heeft een hele pro-Oekraïne muur in de Treeftsteeg. Prachtig. Dus ik kom hem iedereen hier een beetje te steunen.
Goed.
Toch, en ik neem altijd mijn camera mee.
Mooi. Ik vond het wel diepe geschiedenis, hoor.
Nou ja, maar we hebben het over onderdrukking en Oekraïne in de 30e jaren. Ja, toen werden ze helemaal aan hun lot overgelaten.
Ja.
Het is
zou best relevant om daarover te weten. Want hallo, ze staan aan de deur te kloppen.
Ja, aan de deur te kloppen.
Nou ja.
Ze trappen hem over.
Understatement. Ja. Okay.
Maar er zijn van die plekken op de wereld waar altijd alles, en dat is Oekraïne, en dat is de Balkan, Israël sinds 1947, waar het nooit...
Als mensen nou gewoon stopten met geloven in sprookjes. Hè?
Als ze nou zouden stoppen met geloven in geloven, dan zouden we ook... Maar goed,
dat is altijd ambitieus. Laten we beginnen met de sprookjes.
Ja, ja. Maar dit zijn landen die heel veel met sprookjes hebben. Hè? Met veldslagen uit 1200 tegen de Bulgaren.
Ja, sprookjes zijn ook een soort vluchtheuvel.
Het zijn sprookjeslanden ook.
Ja, het zijn vluchtheuvels.
En dat hebben die mensen ook nog steeds.
Ja.
Dus dat maakt het allemaal nog moeilijker om op te lossen.
Mm-hmm. Nou, ja, nee, ik weet niet. Die sprookjes die kunnen toch ook vluchthevels zijn voor de vrije gedachten?
Ja, ja. Ja, dit zijn oorlogssprookjes.
Ja, oké. Okay, ja, natuurlijk. Ja, dat begrijp
dat
ik wel.
Het is allemaal met zwaard maar, en bloed en
maar ik vind paarden en bizons. Echte sprookjes vind ik veel mooier.
Ja, maar ik heb wel sprookjes voor mijn dochters voorgelezen, waarbij ik op driekwart dacht, hier moet ik iets gaan aanpassen. Want dit is te gruwelijk. Die sprookjes van Grimm, die zijn heel naar.
Maar weet je, ik wil zo belangrijk dat...
Is een sprookje, dan zitten er een paar ooievaars op hun nest en een jongen gooit er een steen naar.
Ja.
En het einde van het verhaal is dat de ooievaars hem een dood zusje komen brengen. Die heb ik toen, heb ik dat een beetje aangepast.
Maar
om
kinderen
dochters...
moeten dat ook leren, dat shit happens.
Ja, maar met mij als vader leren ze wel dat het leven hard is. Hebben ze dan hebben ze geen sprookjes voor nodig.
Ja, okay.
Hoe vind jij het?
Ja, ik vind het razend interessant. Ik val van de ene verrassing in de andere.
Weet jij of er gedichten van hem al zijn vertaald in het Engels of het Nederlands?
Ja, volgens mij wel. Er staat daar zo'n heel boek over hem.
Oh, in welke taal?
In het Engels. Nee, wacht even hoor. Nou, die buitenkant zag gewoon een beetje buitenlands uit. Een Cyrillische toestand, weet je wel.
Mag ik zo even een portretje van je schieten? Met je gear. Het licht is hier echt perfect, hè?
Nou ja, alleen in actie.
Alleen in actie?
Ja, je mag, niet, je mag geen foto maken van mij in mijn eentje.
Zo ja, maar het is altijd wel een vlieg. Ergens
ik ga nog even met iemand anders praten.
Ja, lijkt me een heel goed plan. Ik ben helemaal totaal uitgeluld.
Kun je jezelf nog voorstellen?
Nee hoor, helemaal niet. Nou, een geïnteresseerde.
Ja, meestal is het wel zo trouwens, als ik zo vrij mag zijn, is dat als mensen zeggen dat ze niks meer te vertellen hebben, dan komt er nog iets heel interessants.
Oh, nou, dat zullen we dan afwachten. Dat gaan we afwachten.
Ja.
Ga even naar Stefan, want die heeft dit half georganiseerd.
Ja, dat weet ik, maar die heb ik al gesproken.
Kijk, en die heeft nu zijn vriendin, komt langs.
Ja.
Gaan ze kussen. Kijk maar, gaan ze kussen.
Ja. Ja, dit is een prachtige radio, hoor. Je staat live verslag te geven.
Ja.
Zeg maar wat er allemaal gebeurt.
Veel voorbijgangers. Oh, het meisje gaat weer weg.
Ja, sommigen gaan weg. Ja, die houden zeker niet van muziek of zo.
Die heeft net het woord vuurtje geleerd. Want zij komt dan uit Amerika.
Oh,
en toen zei
haar.
Ik tegen haar... Nee, ik ken haar niet.
Oh.
En toen zei ik tegen haar... Wat is dat eigenlijk een mooi woord? Vuurtje. Vuurtje, daar komt-ie. Vuurtje. Vuurtje. Ik doe alleen eigen benzine.
Ja, eigen vuur.
Waar ben jij aan verslaafd? Nou, dat, ja.
Tabak.
Ik doe alleen benzine.
Ik ben gestopt met roken. Nee, ik ga even met iemand
praten. Ga even naar Stefan. Je moet naar Stefan.
Nee, die heb ik al gesproken. Ja,
hallo. Stefan is gek.
Ja, Stefan is hartstikke gek. Die heb ik al een keer gesproken van de week. Volkomen klaar mee. Wie ben jij dan?
Ik ben Rogier.
Oh, jij was iets aan het doen, ook met een trap en zo. Dus,
met een ladder, ja, even een lampje wegdraaien.
Oh ja. Jij bent van de techniek hier in het gebouw? Of,
ja.
Ja, oké. Okay. Dus jij woont hier een beetje? Zo.
Nou, wonen was maar zo'n feest. Ja. Maar ik heb een werkplaats beneden.
Ja, oké.
Okay. Ik houd een beetje draaiende.
Ja. Wat doe je dan in die werkplaats?
Meultjes timmeren en kunstwerk sculpturen maken.
Oh, leuk. Ja.
Ja.
Ja, hartstikke goed.
Ja, en de boel hier overeind houden.
Ja, dat is ook belangrijk.
Ja, dat is een mooie klus. Dat,
ja, het staat al een tijdje toch, dit?
Ja, het bestaat eigenlijk al sinds 1980.
Ja.
Maar wij hebben het nu sinds 2018. Dat is ook alweer even.
Ja.
Maar
We hebben 5 jaar gevierd vorig jaar eigenlijk.
Nee, we hadden het moeten vieren, maar we hebben het nog niet gedaan.
Oh, dus nou, dat wordt wel een keer tijd toch?
Ja, dan moeten we maar eens een feestje geven.
Het verschil tussen die jaartallen is eigenlijk al te groot.
Nou, ik vind het dat namelijk zo'n heel jaar vind ik eigenlijk al arbitrair.
Oh, wacht, nee, dat, het is meer. Ik zit er helemaal naast, joh. Het is al 7, joh.
Mm-hmm.
Hè? We hebben nog steeds niet de 5 gevierd en het is al 7.
Nee, maar dan vieren we toch gewoon 10-jarig bestaan volgend jaar.
Oh ja. Het gemiddelde, ergens half, op 7,5.
Ja, precies.
Vier tegelijkertijd 5 en 10.
Ja.
Ja, wat
moet
een onzin.
De geschiedenis een beetje in de war brengen.
Ja. Ja. Hebben die winnaars ook iets om tegen te vechten.
Precies.
Ja, toch?
Ja, nee.
Zo, we hebben de geschiedenis van de winnaars.
Mm-hmm.
Daar ben ik niks aan. Maar die Stoes, kende jij die al, die man? Of,
nee. Ja, nee, ik had hem even gegoogeld toen dit aangekondigd werd.
Ja.
Dat, dus ik merk heel veel meer dan Wikipedia, wist ik niet. En, okay. Ik heb 2 gedichten van gevonden.
Ja, weet je meer dan ik.
Ja, dat, maar het is...
Ik probeer altijd zo onvoorbereid mogelijk te beginnen.
Ja, en ben je wijzer aan het worden?
Ja, zeker weten. Ik val van de ene verbazing in de andere. Ja. Wat een verhaal, man.
Ja.
Ja, toch?
Ja, absoluut. Ja.
Het is wel heel erg geschiedenis, weet je wel. Oké.
Mm-hmm.
Maar goed, het is wel best wel relevant verhaal natuurlijk.
Ja.
Het is nog niet klaar met die idioten allemaal.
Een held in Oekraïne.
Ja.
Dat. Officieel ook.
Ja.
Ik
ben blij dat we dit dan per ongeluk uitzenden.
Ja, nee, heel goed. Dat je,
maar
gezonde ongelukjes.
Wat gebeurt er verder hier eigenlijk allemaal in dat
verhaal? Ja, meestal.
Want ik heb een beetje moeite om achter het programma te komen.
Ja, dat is. Er staat wel steeds vaker iets op de website, schrijverlijst.nl.
daar heb ik dus gekeken. Niks te vinden hoor.
Deze is pas vorige week aangekondigd bij ons. Ik geloof dat we naar binnen moeten. Maar,
de doorlooptijd is meer dan een beetje met die website of zo.
Volg je Instagram?
Nee,
daar zijn we wel. Daar zijn we wel.
Van die vieze woorden op patapoe. Gadverdamme.
Dat is onze medium voor de aankondiging.
Kijk. Oh, lekker. dankjewel. Wat was er dan ook alweer?
Rogier.
Dankjewel. Gewoon weer terugschakelen. Lieve luisteraar. Oh ja, we zijn te laat. Story of my life. Het is alweer begonnen. Sorry, we gaan even schakelen.
Wil jij continueren? Previous part was dedicated to life and struggle of Vasily Stus and a bit of his poetry. And a part of Stoßfest was a event, or like a, I don't know how to call it, like a project that was called the Soldiers Stoß, where Ukrainian soldiers read verses or poems of Vasil Stoß. One of them was Maxim Krivtsov. Probably you, a lot of you know him, Dali. He was killed on January 7th. I remind you that Stoß was born on January 6th. Maxim recorded reading this poem one day prior to his death. And I will switch on verses that he wrote. But before, I would like to invite his sister Anastasia. She is here, and she will give you a lot of bit information, more information about Max, about his life, and Stoß in his life. Anastasia Krivtsova.
Thank you. So today we came here to honor Vasil Stoß, but he is unfortunately not the only one, not the only poet in Ukraine who was fighting and struggling for something what was right and had to die for his basically values and for his wishes. So I want to have a little tribute for my brother Maxim, who was killed on 7 January this year. He was inspired by Vasil Stoß. He liked his poems, and he was going to read, to record like 4 poems for this festival. Unfortunately, he was able only to make 3 of them because he didn't have time to do the last one. And I want, like now, people here in Netherlands and people all over the world and in Ukraine, of course, to remember him because, you know, Vasil Stoß, he was not just a poet, he was a hero who used his word to stand up for truth and freedom, as our poets who are now at the war, who are on the front line, do as well. And of course, even though the times were tough, Vasil Stoß never stopped fighting for what he believed, and my brother as well. And my brother, he had a book called Vishizbinitsi. Possibly you can order it via this QR code. It is available also in electronic version. So please, if you didn't read it yet, it is very good. And so as Maxim was inspired by Stoß, he had a brave heart and a brilliant mind, as Vasil did. And Maxim's poems were full of passion and deep love for our country. He stood for what was right, just like Vasil Stoß did. And let this event will be not just a tribute, but a reaffirmation of our commitment to the ideals that Vasil Stoß and Maxim Krivtsov lived, wrote, and fought for. And may their courage inspire us, and their words guide us, and their memories unite us in the pursuit of a world where art triumphs over tyranny, and the truth prevails over the oppression. The cruel hands of fate may have silenced their voices, but the echoes of their words will forever resonate in our hearts of those who yearn to freedom and justice. Today, as we listen to Maxim's voice breathing life in the verses of Stoß, let us remember that these words are not mere echoes of the past, but urgent calls of the present and guiding lights for our future. So please ask everybody to support, to remember poets who died, and to support those who are living now, because we have a lot of very talented people in the front line who are fighting right away at zero, and who are very talented and who are struggling every single day fighting our enemy. So please remember and listen to Maxim now, and listen to Stoß, of course, and order a book. And like, let the force be with us. Let, I hope, for our close victory.
Василь Стус, а скажи, Модельяні був ідіот. «А скажи, Модельяні був ідіот?» – допитувалась вона, коли я правними, як у піаніста, пальцями вигравав на засмаглих персах. Такий же ідіот, як і всі в цьому світі, повчав я, обіймаючи успокоєні вибухи її сердець. Розумієш, старий, я часто думаю про незвичайність мистецтва. Це зайва розкіш. Так, мистецтво – то завжди надмір, відповідав, виціловуючи коліна. Але надмір лише і рятує нас від убогості. Смертним полишається єдине, бодай маленький надмір у вірі, у звичках, у смаках, просто в примхах. Так, моя маленька, саме так. Ти, як завжди, говориш діло, повторював, клацаючи зубами від пристрасті. А коли в нас народиться доня, ми кластимемо її в узголів'я, тільки троянди, охриплим голосом проказувала вона. Так, в узголів'я і неодмінно троянди, не своїм голосом, я погоджувався покірно, яка докучлива муха, зіщить і зіщить, убий її, любчику. Василь Стус у цьому полі синьому, як льон. У цьому полі синьому, як льон, де тільки ти і ні душі навколо, уздрів і скляк блукало в тому полі, сто тіней в полі синьому, як льон. А в цілому полі синьому, як льон, судилося тобі самому бути, аби спізнати долі, як покути. У цьому полі синьому, як льон, сто чорних тіней довжаться, ростуть, і вже як ліс соснової малечі, устріч рушають, вдатися до втечі, стежину власну, наче дріт згорнуть, ні вистояти, вистояти, ні, стояти тільки тут, у цьому полі, що наче льон, і власної неволі спізнати тут, на рідній чужині. У цьому полі синьому, як льон, супроти тебе сто, тебе супроти, і кожен супротивник у скорботі, і кожен супротивник з-за ворон, не знаючи, вергатиме прокльон, твоєї самотою обгорілий, здичавлів дух і не пізнає тіла у цьому полі синьому, як льон. Василь Стус напередодні свята. Напередодні свята, коли люди мотнулися по крамницях, виносячи звідти шпроти, смажену рибу, шинку і горілку з перцем, якийсь дивак, обутий модні черевики. Такі тиждень тому були виконали в універмазі «Україна» 22.50 з навантаженням, дитячі штанці 18-го розміру. Облився чортівнею і підпалив себе. О, він горів, як порося, смажений примусом. Налетів на людей, що культурно собі стояли в черзі за цитринами. Порозбігалися усі як один, від нього так несло смаленим, носа було навернути ніяк. На щастя, узялося кілька міліціонерів, одразу вкинули його в машину і помчали в бік Лук'янівки. А чергами таки достоялись. А як же? Що то за святковий стіл без цитрин? Де вибух? Якого хера?
Що пішло?
And now I would like to commemorate all killed soldiers with a minute of silence. Thank you. Now is the last part. We will watch a chamber opera called Василь Стус поем, sorry, Василь Стус пасербай, or Василь Стус перехожий. You can scan QR code and get an English translation of the poems. If Please raise hands once again who is not speaking Ukrainian. I have some versions of translations in English.